right, we're back. Sam's Army, episode 2.10, I believe is what we're on right now. And it has been a hell of a week, even though there's no soccer. Soccer never sleeps, and we got all sorts of drama. But first, let's welcome in everybody who's on this podcast at the moment. Number one, Mike McGee. Welcome back, Mike.
What's
how you doing?
Doing great.
Where'd you go this week?
I was in Las Vegas this week.
Who won, Vegas or you?
I did beat the shit out of me.
Yeah, of course. And this week we are lucky enough to be joined by Clint Mathis, who everybody will remember from his days in MLS and with the U.S. men's national team. Clint, how are you doing?
Doing great. I'm alive. Woke up this morning, so that's a good start. So, just keeping on moving.
Great success. Well, so you guys go way back, do you not? When did you guys first meet each other?
So my rookie year was 2003. So I got drafted by the Metro Stars, walk in, Clint's got the mohawk, was obviously a legend,
powers.
And I rode his coattails for as long as I could. Does that sound accurate, Clint?
Yeah, pretty good. I wouldn't say riding the coattails. I mean, obviously you can see what Mike did in his career and did a great thing, but you know, I like taking all the younger guys and new guys under my wing and try to help out, make them enjoy life and things of that sort. So Mike's always been like a little brother to me. So great relationship there with Mike. So it's been fun to watch him grow and finish his career like he did. It's a great time.
So did you ever like beat him up like a little brother?
No, I never did that. We were older little brother, I guess.
A couple of times I didn't pass you the ball, you told me I sucked, though.
Well, I think I told that to everybody.
Oh, we definitely did enjoy life a little bit, huh?
Oh, yeah, there was nothing wrong with that. We had some good times back then. Look back on it sometimes, and I don't know how I'm still waking up in the morning, and that's why I said that.
Well, speaking of drama, it sounds like you guys have plenty of there. So there's plenty of drama going on here on actually both sides of the Atlantic. So we'll run through some EPL stuff. We got some legends of the game retiring, legends of the U.S. here, Tim Howard and DeMarcus Beasley. We got U.S. men's national team preview. Got all sorts of shit. But first, we really got to start with you, Clint, because, I mean, your career and your resume sort of speaks for itself. You've scored a million goals with a whole host of different MLS teams. You were an MLS or a U.S. men's national team star for a number of years, and I think that's where we really got to start, because the 2002 World Cup is something that, you know, really sort of stands out for me, and I'm sure probably a lot of people listening, as like it's essentially the golden age of U.S. soccer. You know, that incredible run. So what do you, you know, what stands out to you about that tournament and about that team?
Well, I think first and foremost, what stands out about it is, you know, getting a score in a World Cup. You know, not many guys get to say that, you know, throughout their career. If you look at how many people, you know, professional soccer players that are around the world, but getting to play in a World Cup, but then getting a score. So that's something that I don't think I'll ever forget. But as far as that team, I mean, it was just a good group of guys. I mean, everybody that knew their role, you know, Bruce was a coach at the time, and, you know, he did a great job, and still does, of managing guys. He's a great manager. He knows the right fit of attitudes, skill sets, whatever you want to call it, through everything. But he really is a great manager, full of that group of guys, and all those guys are willing to work for each other. I think Mike can attest to that, you know, playing for Bruce, you know, not only, you know, with the Red Bulls, but also, you know, with the Galaxy. And, you know, just remembering that and how much fun we had in the locker room. But, yeah, we went out on the field and did our job. So, you know, it made it nice and easy and just a lot of fun. Even though there was a lot of pressure going on, you didn't really feel as much pressure because we were such a close-knit group of guys and was having fun what we were doing.
First of all, I don't think there's another American, nor ever will be, that could have scored that goal. Do you agree?
Ooh, you better watch out. You're getting close to home with Orlando.
That's why he's here. That was a good line.
No, it was one of those things that you know, I mean, and you've probably felt it so many times, Mike, is that you don't even think about it. It's just something that you've practiced on the training field, or, you know, just done so many times that, you know, you're not even thinking. Your body just does it before you can even think. So you know, in those situations, you don't have time to really think. You just got to go and do. And I was fortunate. It was great ball by John O'Brien, and, you know, I was able to get a good first touch and then a clean strike with the left foot. So great feeling, but, you know, those are a dime a dozen, you know, in the world of soccer today. So it was just great to be a part of it.
What inspired the mohawk?
Oh, that was so funny. It was I just talked about pressure, and I've always been the goofball in the locker room. I'm always like making people laugh and do things that way it can take the edge off. And we were getting ready for this game, and me and Pablo were even late for the team meeting that day.
Sounds about right.
The starting lineup, and we thought that the meeting was later, and it wasn't. It was a cluster, so wasn't too happy right before that. But I decided just to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to ease the tension. Let the guys laugh at me a little bit and not really focus on the game too much as far as the hardships of having to go out and play in front of the world. And it was an important game, so just wanted to have fun, lighten the mood a little bit, and luckily it paid off, because if I wouldn't have scored or performed, kind of could have got a little pie on my face.
Yeah, you're a fucking legend. You are an absolute legend.
Did you guys actually get did you have any fun while you're over there for that World Cup?
I got to have a little bit of fun. I mean, obviously, we were focused on one thing, and that was, getting through that group and continuing to move on. But, we got to see a little bit of soul and look around, and we got to do some of the tourist thing. The cool thing of getting to have a little bit more fun is we were there, I believe, a few weeks before the World Cup started, or at least a couple of weeks. So we got to, play a little golf, go on the DMZ Center, a little touristy stuff, but nothing crazy, because I think, one of the stories that I thought that, hey, this is real, because I didn't really get to experience it, in MLS before that World Cup. But I remember my family was there, and we went to the Sony store to see all the new computers and stuff that you would never see here. And then all of a sudden, I look at the people that work at the Sony store, and they're just like staring behind me like crazy. And I look behind me, and there was probably a slew of people that were plastered up against the glass, because I was the only white guy that sold with a mohawk, I guess. So it was pretty funny, and that was right after I scored against South Korea. So that was a pretty surreal experience there.
Well, what was crazy, so my rookie year, 2003, obviously just after you scored that goal, and we go grab dinner or whatever you do in New York, and no joke, you were probably one of the most famous people in the entire country. And it's not an exaggeration or saying it because you're on the phone. I think the Mohawk helped, but scoring that goal and kind of introducing basically soccer to our country. And I think you're probably the first cool soccer player. So
say he's like the first guy with like real personality. Like,
yeah, some swag.
Sort
yeah.
of like the Dempsey before.
Being able to be noticed about that, like you said, the Mohawk helped. If I didn't have that, it probably would have just been a walk in the park and nobody would even recognize you. But that definitely helped, and it kind of stood out. But that also led to a lot of our fun, so I think it kind of benefited both of us.
Yeah, that Mohawk set me up for a good whatever, 3 or 4 years.
All right. Well, so the other thing that really stands out is, coming out of that World Cup, as you said, Mohawk, probably a brilliant business decision, put you in sort of the public eye. Obviously, scoring a goal against the host nation didn't hurt either. So, I guess two things before I actually move off the World Cup. Do you hate Torsten Frings? Should I ask you this before?
Not really.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the way it goes. It's sport, and that's what we sign up to do. And not always the best team's going to win or the best performance on that day. But when we lost to Germany in that World Cup, I think that was we were the better team. But as far as like hating guys for anything like that, I know it's more of a joke. But hey, it comes with the territory. You win some, you lose some. But what a great all-around experience. It's something that I get to tell my children about now. And I know I'm aging myself here, and I'm that old. But it works out. So it was fun. That was a past life, and now I just move on to what I'm doing now. And yeah, it's great memories, put it that way.
Bill Belichick would be really proud of that.
Yeah,
answer,
that was a really politically real political answer. Well done. So you mentioned coming out of that World Cup, you guys were on a serious high. You personally were on a serious high. You were playing great. Something happened. You were going to get bought by Bayern, but MLS essentially blocked it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what was going on behind closed doors, but we had a weekend off. And after Bayern Munich won the Champions League, they came to New York. We did a little scrimmage thing, Giant Stadium. We played really well. Obviously, you know, half those guys are probably drunk from celebrating, but so be it. We still won, and, you know, I played pretty well. And after that, you know, got an invite to come and visit, and so I got to meet, you know, Ulionis and all those guys, Rumeniga, all the guys that were running the organization at the time, and actually inked a deal. So I signed my deal, and it was obviously contingent on the league selling me, and, you know, they waited. Wanted more, and obviously with it being before the World Cup, he's like, he's never played, you know, in Europe before, never been on the world stage, and you know, the league just kind of pulled that away, and it was unfortunate because I think that obviously my career would have went a different path, but you know, I'm a big believer in God, and everything happens for a reason, and you know, it took me down the path that I was supposed to be down, and got to meet my wife the second go around when I went in Germany, and met her in Germany, so. Case to Ross Aral, but at the time, yeah, I was bitter. I was pretty bitter, you know, for a while after that, going, you know, why am I getting screwed here? But, you know, over time, I just let it be, and that's the way it goes. It definitely wouldn't happen nowadays. And I think that, you know, like Mike mentioned earlier, you know, being the guy with a mohawk and out there and not the normal quiet, and people were starting to recognize what soccer was, maybe in New York and, you know, across the country because of, you know, my hairdo and what we did at the World Cup. But I don't think the MLS was ready for someone like that, you know, to be honest with you, as far as the marketing and just letting someone be. But if you look at the league now, how much has grown and lets, you know, the players really go out and voice their opinion and just – let them do their thing. And I just don't think that the league was big enough and grown enough to allow that to happen.
Well, the bottom line was the league needed you. I mean, you're kind of the first breath of fresh air. And, I mean, you're on Sports Illustrated cover once and maybe twice.
No, it was supposed to be twice, but I didn't start that first game in the World Cup, so they gave it to Landon.
Damn, Landon.
What a dick.
One thing about that, I would have been the only athlete ever to be back-to-back covers.
I'll take one, dude. Give me one. Yeah. Well, damn, that sucks.
I mean, it sounds like it. It really sounds like you, in a sense, almost like you took a hit when I say the team, you took a hit for the league, which ended up being taking a hit for future generations of kids. You know, the kids like the Tim. Or Josh Sargent, or more like Tyler Adams, Matt Miazga, Zach Steffen, these guys that have went from MLS and actually gone over to Europe and Bundesliga specifically. You know, it sounds like you almost laid the foundation for that to actually happen, and by
stable. I appreciate that, but there were other guys laying that foundation too. So it's just one of those things when the league is in such early stages. I mean, they call them pioneers or whatnot, and if I'm considered one of those guys in the early years to do that, but you know, there were guys before us. I mean, you look at what the guys did in the 94 World Cup that enabled this league to start, to be able to go through that. So I mean, you gotta, you know, pave the concrete in the road somewhere to lead a path for people in the future. So if I'm part of that, that's great. And you know, there's no looking back now. You got to live in the moment that you live in now, enjoy the memories that you had, and look at, you know, look at the vision in the future, and just only hope, you know, that you're going to be able to continue to grow and make things better around you.
Hey, you really do sound like a politician, to be honest.
How's your Bruce Arena impression these days?
Like, what the fuck? I can't believe you're fucking passing the ball there. Just keep it simple, Mike.
That's spot on. My palms started sweating. Oh, that's awesome, man.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, that, honestly.
Just so you guys, I know we've been talking about me a lot. I want to get into some of this dirt you're talking about. I know I'm going to have a handful more minutes before I got to go into this other meeting.
All right.
Yeah, give me some of this dirt. Let's talk about a little dirt. Or
yeah, drama. Drama. We got plenty of drama. I didn't want to keep you too long, but we got plenty of drama to talk about if you want to get into it. So basically, it's international breaks. We don't really have much to talk about in Europe with, you know, EPL. We can go stroke off Liverpool later. But for right now, the two things that I had written down are, number one, fixing Spurs, and number two, this Rooney Vardy drama. And they're actually connected because I figured out how to fix Spurs, and that's just to let Jan Vertonghen bang Christian Eriksen's wife, because everybody thinks that he did anyway, so might as well do it and get the passion back in the team. So I just fixed Spurs right there. Also, drop the diamond and get Serge Uri off the team. But also, That leads us to the Rooney Vardy story, which is the craziest thing going on in probably the entire world. And that includes, like, you know, not just soccer. It's just insane what happened. I won't regurgitate the entire thing since most of you guys probably know. But basically, Wayne Rooney's wife did a whole sting operation and figured out that Jamie Vardy's wife was the one that's been leaking stories about her family to The Sun, which is one of those sort of trash journalist, you know, quote unquote journalism magazines that nobody actually respects in the UK. But she was selling stories reportedly, and she got caught. So not only did she, Colleen Rooney is Wayne's wife's name. She not only caught her, but then she blew her out in social media, like on Twitter and Instagram, and basically said, "I caught your ass, and this is what's
going on." I don't think Clint knows what Instagram is, but it's a social media.
Happened right now.
So what are your thoughts on that? This chick literally pretended like she was putting stories out for the world and was only she was blocking everyone but Vardy's wife, and Vardy's wife didn't know that. So obviously, when the story surfaced, it had to have been her. So what's going on, man?
I could say, and obviously being somewhat old school, but I do know the whole technology aspect, but that's one fucking reason I don't even get into it, because people fucking try to blow each other up. It's unbelievable.
You would be... Go ahead. I would say you would literally be the greatest person in the history of social media, so this is heartbreaking.
No, it might be a heartbreak, but I'm doing good where I'm at.
I think you're smart enough to know... Oh, go ahead, Clint.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other thing I was going to say, it just goes to show... Well, fucked up things people will do for money, and it's sad. I mean, whether they have a relationship, obviously they don't anymore, but what an unbelievable situation. That's why they say men are dogs and women are cats, right?
Can you elaborate on that?
Meow.
Oh, that's literally one of the craziest things I've ever heard. I kind of love it, though.
This is going to go on. First of all, what you said, Clint, is actually absolutely true, because the thing about this is that Colleen Rooney was putting all these stories on Instagram, and not just the ones that she was, like, using to smoke out Jamie Vardy's wife, but she was putting all this other stuff on Instagram. Maybe just don't put it on Instagram. Maybe don't put it on Facebook. Maybe don't put it on Twitter, you know? Like, keep some shit to yourself.
Yeah, it's a tough concept to understand, right?
I as somebody who has, like, been on social media for years and has actually kept a kind of a low profile, I mean, it's not that hard. Like, you just gotta maybe just shut your mouth every now and again. But
exactly.
That's, I shouldn't get on Rooney too hard here, because it's just her doing what everybody else in the world does. It's fucked up what Jamie Vardy's wife did. I don't know. Exactly. So this is, like, you know, Rooney is still around the national team. He's not playing for them. He's obviously retired. Vardy is still playing for the national team. I mean, is this something that, like, would seep into their relationship and their, you know, dynamic when around in the national team sense?
Well, I'm sure. I mean, you look at how small soccer is around the world. I mean, not alone in England. But, I mean, this ain't the first time there's been big controversy in the world of soccer in the Premier League, with all the scandals and everything that goes on there, people banging each other's wives and all kinds of stuff.
Can't do that.
This is just another checkbox that they're just qualified for to do this in the Premier League. So, yeah, it's nothing new, but it's just about that quick 15 minutes of fame. Call somebody up that you don't give a shit about, right?
Yeah. And then, Sam, I'm sure me and you will get back into it, but Clint, before you go, we got
Beasley
and
Howard.
Howard.
Let's get a memory.
You got a story or message or anything?
Well, you know, obviously I don't know Bastian that well, but what a great fucking player. I mean, what a great career he's had, and I think he's done well when he came into Chicago. And I know a lot of people say that has-beens have come, but, you know, a lot of those guys have come here, and it's really hard to leave Europe and come back and play in this league. It's harder than people think. So I thought he made a great transition, and, you know, I'm glad he ended up being able to grace his presence out on the American field to show people that, you know, that this league is good and good players can still play here. But I'll leave it at that with him. As far as Tim and Beasley, two great guys, first and foremost, before I even talk about players. great guys. We had some good times back at old Club Pugo, which is the little nightclub I had in my basement. Go figure, I had a nightclub in my basement. I still remember the story with me and you when we went out one time, and the girls didn't actually believe it. So I was like, hey, if I don't have a nightclub in my basement, I'll bring you back to the city. And boy, that changed.
I don't know what you're talking about, Clint.
Tim had some fun there. But what a great athlete. It was so much fun going against him every single day. And obviously, I still think that he's been, athletic-wise, easily the best goalkeeper that the U.S. has produced. Just some of the stuff that he could do in a frame that big was amazing to watch. And then we got little Beetlejuice, Beasley. Guy weighs about 110 pounds soaking wet. But for him to have the career as long as he had, I wish I, had the endurance and, speed and stuff like that. I'm telling what I probably could have done instead of, being the guy that would make everybody else run and just give me the ball when you can. very proud of both of those guys and how they represented themselves and their club teams and especially the country. For Beasley to be able to go on that many World Cups, it's just been a lot of fun to watch. And, another one of those guys that, every once in a while he'd get to party with us. I remember old club in New York that I have great contacts at, Lotus. Mike knows nothing about that.
No clue what you're talking about.
I don't think you ever went there.
I never went there on any Sunday night ever.
No, never. And then I remember throwing him a big party and, had Ante Razov, Lewis, Thornton, all these guys or whatever. And it was so funny. The one thing I remember about that is I got Beasley a table, got him with bottles and everything. And then I got pulled up by the door by one of the bouncers and said, yeah, there's about 10, 15 dudes out here that want to get in. And I go, well, I don't know fucking one of them. I guess it was the U.S. water polo team. And I was like, well, they're not with me, so don't worry about that. And I was like, Beasley's got enough people here having fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm sure there's probably more that you're not sharing, which is probably okay. I can understand.
That's my fault. I'm old. I'm about to be 43 next month. And, hopefully it's not dementia. I just think it's getting old age that I can't remember all the details.
I'm going to blame it on that, too.
Yeah, it's weird. Mike's been using that card, too. That's awesome. Well, Clint, can't thank you enough for joining us.
Sorry I couldn't stay with you guys longer, but hey, anytime you guys give me a shout, dude. It was a lot of fun chatting with you guys, and like I said, I'll do anything for my little bro, Mike. So this was a fun time hanging out with you guys.
You're the man, Clint.
Appreciate it, Clint. Take care. All right, so that was Clint Mathis. Sounds like an awesome guy. I think he gave us some of the PG-13 rated stories. Can't help thinking.
Yeah, I think he kind of gave us a hint that. He had some fun, but
we'll bring him on again, and he'll be, we'll get the R rated.
Yeah, we have kids now, so gotta be careful.
True. So last but not least, we do want to run through the U.S. men's national team, because obviously that's sort of the biggest thing going, other than Jamie Vardy's wife and Wayne Rooney's wife at each other's throats. So we got two games coming up. It's not friendlies anymore. These are now called Nations League, so they actually quote-unquote matter. We're playing Cuba on Friday, Canada next Tuesday. Two games that obviously the U.S. should win. I mean, there's no question about it. I think we've lost to Cuba maybe once in like the last 60 or 70 years. So, like, do they, like, they don't even have democracy yet. There's just no – let's not even talk about, like, the opponent in this one. Canada, they at least bring something to the table. They've got some actual players that are playing internationally in MLS, obviously. They have democracy as well, so that's, a point in their favor. U.S. should win that game as well. I think really, obviously, what we're going to focus on, though, is the U.S. team. And specifically, who we do and do not want to see. I feel as though we probably have a difference of opinion on some guys, but I'll say, so I have a new rule, actually. I'm going to put a new rule out there. New rule. So if a coach plays a player in 2019 or 3 years before the World Cup, so we're at the very beginning of a cycle right now. If you play a player because you trust him, you should be, like, suspended or fined. Because, like, that's not what this is about. That's not what 2019 is about. 2019 is about, like, getting guys out there who haven't had a chance, who you don't trust because you don't know their ceiling. you don't know how good they can be. You know, they're the guys that, like, you're building for the future, right? So the guys that he trusts, I'll put out, there's three of them. Will Trapp, Jassy Zardes, and Tim Ream. I think those are three guys that he trusts, and they could be in the lineup at some point that I just don't need to see anymore. I know that you're a big Zardes fan, so I know you disagree with me on that. And I will say, Zardes scores. He's been scoring a lot of goals.
Here's my only counter to that is no one's taking his job.
Right.
I can't look and say, listen, there's a lot of potential. And by the way, I'm not sticking up for. I'm not going to disagree with you, or I don't think anyone's ran away with that position. But you know, my only defense for anyone is I'm just waiting for someone to take their job, and I don't necessarily think that anybody has. So
it gets harder now that Altidore is out. Mm-hmm. He left camp with an injury. Walker Zimmerman is out. He left with an injury as well. So that, you know, that whittles down the list of players who could play instead of, say, a guy like Zardes and instead of a guy like Ream. But there are alternatives. So Sargent is already, we can put him in the starting 11. So Berhalter already disclosed he was going to be in the starting 11, which I give all the thumbs up. I give both thumbs on my hand, two thumbs on my toes or whatever. Like, I give all the thumbs up for that. Sargent has to play. I mean, he should play 180 minutes.
Yeah, I'm hoping he grabs, you know, he grabs the position and he keeps it.
That's what we want to see. Behind Sargent, you know, Pulisic is obviously in the 11. I would say my ideal 11 here. So I'd Sargent, Pulisic, Legette, your boy. Also, you know, between Boyd and Areola, I could go either way. McKennie is 100% in the lineup. The big question, obviously, unless you're going to say McKennie is a six, which he's not really, he's like a box-to-box guy. The big question is six. You know, the defensive midfielder position, are you going to have Michael Bradley? Are you going to have Will Trapp? And those are the two options. People are going to be mad whoever Berhalter plays at this point because, I mean, everybody wants to see Tyler Adams for good reason. He's the future of that position unless Berhalter does something stupid and puts him in right back, but we can get into that later. It's basically Bradley to Trapp. I would prefer to see Bradley because I think Bradley is a better player. I think Trapp seems like, honestly, the nicest guy that like I've ever heard talk. He just seems like the nicest guy. I would love to like be friends with him and watch the game on the couch with him. In fact, like if he wants to watch any games on the couch, preferably US men's national team, I'd like welcome him come do it. But I just think Bradley's a better player and he has the experience and in this situation I'd rather have Bradley.
Yeah, I mean, I think in both these games Michael's gonna run the show. I mean, if he's playing, he's, you know, he's so experienced, and to be honest, his soccer IQ is just higher than anyone else's. So especially when they're playing a team like Cuba, I think he could, kind of single-handedly dominate that game and put other guys in positions to succeed.
And then so the question is, by having Bradley on the field, are we then sucking some of the, you know, essentially, is he taking that the reins and is he being that guy when what we really need is somebody else to take that?
We need somebody to take it.
Right.
But that's not.
Do you think can they do that with Bradley on the field? Do we need to remove Bradley, you know, from the equation?
Somebody's got to earn it. He's earned that. He's earned every, you know, he earned that spot. And I'm, guys have had opportunities, whether it be even in MLS and, you know, obviously in Europe, and no one's shown me that they could help the team more than Michael. And
at least on the roster. I think that Tyler Adams can take that position.
No, Tyler Adams is my guy. I'm purely talking about this roster.
Yeah. So I'll go with McKennie and Bradley sort of as a double pivot. McKennie obviously has a lot more freedom to move forward. Defense is, there's some question marks there. We don't really have a left back on this team. Obviously everybody wants to see Sergiño Dest. He hasn't decided whether he's going to go with the U.S. or the Netherlands. He's making a business decision. I understand that. We'll find out soon on that. But from the roster that we have here, I would prefer to see Lima on the left, even though I know he's a right back by, you know, trade. I know he knows how to play left back. I'd like to see him there. In the center, I'd like to see Miazga and Long. Obviously, some people would like to see Ream. I disagree. He's 32 right now. He's going to be 30, whatever. Do the simple math here. I'm not very good, but like he's gonna be 35 in 2002. Do we want a 35-year-old center back starting in the World Cup? I mean, I say no. So like, I just don't really know why he would play in this. And then at the right back, Yedlin. So Yedlin's back. Reggie Cannon, I will say, has played very well for the U.S. He's also had a pretty good season in MLS. So I get that, you know, Reggie Cannon could have a shout for that since Yedlin's been out for so long. But I think Yedlin's our number one. So I think you slot him in there. You disagree on any of that?
No, I'm digging your lineup for sure.
And then we got the goalkeeper. So the options are Stefan, Guzan, and Sean Johnson. I mean, I say play Stefan for 180 minutes. I think he's our number one. I think you play your number one. I've seen a lot of things written like, you know, might as well, or I've seen people say that he is absolutely not going to play both games. Like Berhalter is going to play a different goalkeeper one of the games, which this bleeds into another argument I have about goalkeepers. Like, what, is he going to be fucking tired from standing there for 90 minutes? Like, why can't he play 100 minutes in 180 minutes? I just don't understand that.
I think it's just that, you know, if something happens in a World Cup and you got whoever you your number two is, just you got to put him in spots. I don't know. I don't really care.
You're playing devil's advocate.
Stefan's our number one. Gazan's an awesome backup. I think that's the least of our worries.
Right. Yeah. But I just think you play your number one. Just play Stefan for 180 minutes. I don't, you know, Johnson has always been sort of right on the cusp of breaking it in, and he hasn't really, but he hasn't. So I just don't really think that we need to mess with the, you know, what a good thing, I guess. Just keep your number one and play your number one.
I can't wait for us to have a healthy team.
Yeah,
Adams is, I really want to see him. I think he's going to be, I think he's going to be our best player, to be honest with you.
He's in that spot too that like he's can step in and take the power that like the conch shell from Michael Bradley and sort of take the whole team on his back.
I think he's got some balls and heart, and I think in our next really tough matchup that he plays in, I think he's gonna show us something.
Put his stamp on the entire program. Yeah, I mean, like everybody's just, including me, are just dying for Pulisic, McKennie, and Adams to like, you know, get together in the midfield, and obviously you can add Timothy Weah to that. John Brooks, slot him in the center back. You know, hopefully Dest at left, and now we're really cooking with gas.
Now we're talking. I like that lineup.
now we'll really beat Canada. So the two games, just as a quick reminder, yes, the results do matter for Nations League, but honestly, performance is what we're really looking for at this stage in the cycle. So hopefully we get a good performance, actually two performances. Beat Canada by, I don't know, say two at least, and Canada and Cuba by six. That's what I'll say, though. But that's what the line for success should be. And yeah, that's it. Let's fucking go. Let's win some games. Let's get like a good feeling. Like, we're talking about the 2002 World Cup. That's like, I mean, that's the golden age of soccer, but that's like when we really felt good about the U.S. That's the last time I remember feeling like.
Yeah, I just, the passion and heart those guys played with was contagious. And I really just want to see that out of this group. I just want to see guys busting their ass. I want to see a red card or something. I just want to see guys going nuts and wearing the jersey with pride.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they got worked up. Landon Donovan's goal against Algeria was, you know, was it Algeria? It was Algeria, right?
Yeah, it was Algeria.
I'm like, my mind goes blank. But yeah, there are other positives, but 2002 is just like, God, Torsten fucking Frings. Torsten fucking Frings. But yeah, so hopefully we get some good performances, some good results. Hopefully they come from that. And we'll be back next week with some new guests and some actual soccer games to talk about. So thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you later.
Cheers.